Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing selling a house for top dollar with Mindy Jensen.
Yeah, Joel, our guest today knows pretty much everything there is to know about residential real estate. Mindy Jensen, she is a licensed real estate agent in Colorado, and she's been buying and selling homes for about 20 years now. And not only does she buy and sell for her clients, but she is an investor herself. Specifically, she has this effective way of flipping properties, and we'll get into that here in a little bit. But Mindy, she works at BiggerPockets.com, where she helps investors learn the proper ways to invest in real estate. And she also co-hosts the podcast, Bigger Pockets Money. And so today we'll spend the majority of our time, though, talking through the ways that our listeners can sell their homes for the most money possible. Mindy, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you guys today. I love real estate, so hit me.
All right.
Or hit me, I guess, hit me with your best shot. Don't just hit me.
Great song, too, by the way. Mindy, also, you wrote a book. Like, this is how much you love real estate. You wrote a book called How to Sell Your Home. And if our listeners stay tuned till the end of the show, we're going to give away 10 physical copies, autographed copies of your book. So
that's so awesome.
Stay tuned for that. By the way, the first thing that we lead off, the first question that we lead off asking people is about craft beer, because Matt and I drink a craft beer on the show. It's really important to us. Today on the show, we're drinking a beer called Slammin' at the Club by Casa Agria Specialty Ales. And I know you love craft beer as well. What's your splurge? What's your craft beer equivalent? As you're saving money and being intentional as you save for the future, what are you willing to spend a little bit more on right now?
Well, it is absolutely a splurge. It is literally the dumbest thing you could spend money on. It is a car. On the Bigger Pockets Money podcast, one of the questions we ask of all of our guests is, what is your biggest money mistake? And most people have some version of, I bought a brand new car. I don't actually buy new cars. I bought a used car back when I was in high school 1,000 years ago. I had a friend who worked at the Acura dealership, and I was picking him up after work, and I walk in and I'm like, oh my God, what is that? What is that car? That's the most beautiful car I've ever seen in my life. And he's like, oh, that's the new NSX. I'm like, wow, that is amazing. How much is it? He's like, $60,000. I'm like, well, that's not going to be my car.
That's a lot of money.
I was in high school. Yeah, there was a lot of, I mean, that was a lot of money back then. It's a lot of money now, but it was even more back then. So fast forward like 10 years, this car came with this coffee table book instead of a sales brochure because it was $60,000. And I found a copy of that coffee table book at a thrift store. So I bought it thinking, someday I'm going to own an NSX. And I packed it up and moved it every time we moved because, as you alluded to in your introduction, I do live in flipping, which means I move every 2 or 3 years. So I'm packing up things a lot. We started talking. My husband and I started talking. I'm like, you know, I would really like to own one of these cars now that we're financially independent. You know, let's look at them. And we found one and it cost $45,000, which
that's
is
steep.
That is an absurd amount of money to spend on an old Honda.
For an old car. Yeah.
For an old Honda. I've got a friend who has one too. He's like, yeah, I got an old Honda. When I went to get license plates for it, she's looking, she's like, is this $4,500 or $45,000? I said, oh, that's $45,000. She's like, why would you pay so much for a 1991 car?
Well, you and your husband, you're both into cars, right? You guys are both kind of car nerds to a certain extent. I know your husband, Carl, he really wants a Tesla. Am I right?
Yes, he is a super car nerd. I am not so much, but I was always really, really excited about this car. So he bought it. He drove it home from Wisconsin is where we found it. And I started driving it to work when it was nice outside and, you know, it wasn't going to rain or hail or snow or whatever. And I felt so awesome in this car. I was like, woohoo, I feel like hot snot. You know, I'm driving down. Everybody's looking at you. Like, as you drive down the road in an NSX, people will come up next to you. Like, the passenger is hanging out of his car with his camera, like, taking pictures of your car. And it was a perfect specimen. It was, like, most beautiful type of this car. And then I was driving down the expressway, and there's this guy in this super jacked up pickup truck, and he starts coming over. And I'm like, no, don't hit me. Don't hit me. And I'm honking my horn. And he finally like sees me at the last minute. And that kind of flipped a switch in my head. Like, you're sitting on a pile of $45,000 driving down the road and you could get into a car accident and ruin it. So I said to Carl, maybe we should sell this car. He's like, yeah, I've been thinking about that for about 6 months now. And we should sell it. And then I swear the next day a house came on the market that we wanted to buy and we needed to close really quickly. And we're like, let's sell the car so we can buy a house.
So for you, it was a car. You know, I feel like a lot of people do have that car story, Joel. That's not something that I feel like you have. I kind of have that story of spending, I don't know, maybe more money on a vehicle than I had ever really wanted to, but you're always pretty good about finding those deals, spending the bare minimum amount that kind of gets you there, right?
Well, I tried, but sometimes it bit me. Sometimes I did go too cheap with car purchases, that's for sure.
I've been there too, Joel.
Right? Oh, man, like the $1,800 beater. I've done that, and it didn't last me very long.
No, it doesn't.
Well, Mindy, like you alluded to, you are financially independent. You're known online sometimes as Miss 1500, and that's because of your goal that you and your husband, Carl, that you had to reach financial independence in 1500 days or less. And, you know, that was a while ago. But where did you guys get that crazy goal? And actually, like, how's it going? Because you don't get to talk to folks every day who are financially independent.
It's going perfect. Thanks. Have a nice day. So Carl was a software developer. He loves computers almost as much as he loves cars. And he loves programming computers. I was a stay-at-home mom. And he was having a really, really bad day. It turns out there was a bug in the code that he was writing. And the code that he was writing was for a blood bank software. So if you have surgery and you need units of blood, this software would choose the unit that matches with your body, blood type, and all this stuff so that you don't die. Because if you get a different unit of blood, it's like not compatible and your body's like, no, we're just going to die instead of, you know, figuring it out or whatever. Obviously, I am not a blood person. But having this code that could kill somebody really gave him a lot of stress, which is kind of the dumbest thing I've ever said. Writing code that could kill somebody.
The code that could kill somebody was killing him.
Yes. So spoiler alert, he didn't write the code and it turns out there wasn't a bug. But for about a week, his whole team didn't know that. So he just had all this stress and anxiety and he finally sat down at his computer and he just banged out, how do I retire early? And this little website that probably maybe you've not heard of. It's called Mr. Money Mustache.
Heard of
that
the guy.
Popped up. And he's reading through. He's like, no way. And he keeps reading. He's like, this guy's selling something. What is he selling? So he keeps reading. He keeps reading. He's like, wait a second. This is just a math problem. This guy is laying it out. And he laid out the 4% rule in a way that Carl had never seen before. He's like, oh my God, we could retire really soon. And he comes running down the stairs. He's like, hey, we can retire in about 3 years or 6 years or whatever it was. And I'm like, okay, great. Because I knew how stressed he was about his job. And he's like, and I'm going to start a blog about it. I'm like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of my life. Because why would you blog about that? He only knew of Mr. Money Mustache and Get Rich Slowly at the time. But he decided he wanted to start a blog about it. We figured out our current net worth. We projected how long it would take us to get to our desired net worth of $1 million in investable assets. He thought it would be about 1,500 days. So he's like, well, that's the name of our blog. Great. Good luck with the blog. I thought he was going to run out of things to write about, and he cranks it out all the time. So yeah, that's how 1,500 days came to be.
And that goal, Mindy, of something specific like 1,500 days, I got to imagine that was like a driving force the whole time. That being the blog name, that being kind of the time period that you guys had picked out, that had to be really, really helpful in kind of nudging you at the times where you probably wanted to kind of bow out or stop socking away as much money as you were and maybe start spending more today. Did that kind of specific time frame, was that a big boost in helping you guys continue to attack that goal?
You know, I'd love to agree with you because that sounds way better than saying we're just really cheap and we didn't spend a lot of money. And
yeah.
We both knew that you needed to invest. So we did. And he's a tech guy. So he would invest in things that he knew about. He was having a problem at work one day, a different problem. And he's like, oh, man, I don't know how to do this. And his seatmate said, oh, you should Google it. And he's like, what? This is a way long time ago. It's like, you should look it up in Google. And Carl's like, what is that? So this guy shows him and Carl types in his question and there's his answer. He's like, oh my God, what is this? What is this amazing thing called Google? And when they went public, they did this like Dutch auction thing and he like bid on stock and they're like, okay, everybody bid this much or this is the average of everybody's bid or whatever. The stock price is going to be this. So he bought a ton of it and then Facebook came out and he bought a ton of that. And, you know, we've had some duds too, but we've had some really great products. And once Apple came out with the iPod, all you see everywhere you go is white headphones. Everything else was black headphones, but Apple has white headphones. You see white headphones in everybody's ears. You're like, oh, that may be a thing. You know, that might be a good stock.
Like, I think that's going to be something. I don't know. Just a hunch. Well, Mindy, I have a quick follow up though. So we're talking about financial independence. So for you guys, like obviously besides you being able to kind of buy the car of your dreams for a short period of time there, right? How did financial independence change how you guys live? Because of all the folks we've talked to who are financially independent, I feel like y'all are maybe what I would call the most normal. Like you've got a couple kids, you live in Colorado, like the kids go to school.
You're still doing weird stuff to make money, which we're going to talk about living
exactly.
flips in just a second. You guys still live like a super normal life. You haven't bought like your own island or anything like that.
But yeah. So how have you realized that financial independence? Like what has that changed?
So the biggest change is that Carl doesn't have to go to a job that he hates. And I think in FIRE, financial independence, retire early, most people focus on the RE and, you know, oh, I got to get to financial independence so I can quit my job. And that's what he did. But we were financially independent for a while before he took the leap, before he actually quit his job, because he had a really good paying job. He was making six figures. He could work from home. Why would you walk away from that? And he didn't know what he wanted to do after he quit his job. So he just stayed for a little bit longer. And then I got the job that I have now working at Bigger Pockets. I love my job. I've never had a job that I love more. So it was okay for him to leave because we sort of had a cushion. I don't really feel like I'm working because I get to talk about real estate all day long. I get to talk about money all day long. I don't have to work there. I get to work there. I love going to work. I feel guilty when I go to work. You know, I'll be leaving the house and the girls are fighting with each other and Carl's like wrangling them, and I'm like, see ya, I'm gonna go have a good time at the office, you know. But I really enjoy what I do. I love everybody that I work with. It's just a really great experience. So he gets to run his own life. You know, he works at, we have partnered with that very little known blogger, Mr. Money Mustache, on a co-working space in our town of Longmont. But it's not really a job. Like, he just really enjoys talking to people.
Just kind of feels like
really
he's hanging out, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, he's just hanging out. And like, he works on the blog. We just bought a house. Ooh, this is a good segue. We just bought a dumpy house that we're fixing up.
Okay,
so
perfect segue. Let's get into that. So you guys are still normal people despite having achieved financial independence, but you guys are still doing live-in flips. And we really want to talk a lot about selling a home, Mindy, because you literally wrote the book on that. But I'm really, really interested in how you guys have used the live-in flip strategy to help build some of that wealth, to help you achieve financial independence. So can you first share with our listeners what a live-in house flip is?
Okay, so a flip is when you take an ugly house and you make it look beautiful and you sell it. A live-in flip is when you buy an ugly house, you move into it as your primary residence while you fix it up. You have to live there for at least, well, you don't have to, but I live there for 2 years. And then when I go to sell it, I pay $0 in capital gains taxes because it was my primary residence. I lived there for 2 years and I pay zero capital gains taxes up to $500,000 because of the Section 121 exclusion in the United States tax code. So I've never hit that $500,000. I'm really excited
not
about
yet.
This house. Not yet. Not yet. The house that we just moved from, we bought for $176,000. We put about $100,000 into it. And I could list it today and sell it tomorrow for $525. I could list it and sell it a little bit longer for probably $575 or $600,000 because
That's
I
incredible.
Lived in it. Yeah, because I lived in it, because I, you know, did all the I didn't do all the renovations myself. And when I say I mean my husband and I. We did hire some people. Like, we put a second story on. That's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. Okay. that's something you're going to do on the side with kids.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Asking for dinner. Like, is it time to eat yet? It's like, no, I gotta add the second story to the house.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'll be done in 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. So an air fryer and chicken nuggets are your best friend as a live-in flipping mom.
So that brings us to another question about it. Well, and first, I want to say on the tax thing, you said up to $500,000 tax-free in profit from the live-in flips. And if you're a single individual, that's $250,000. Because if you live Correct. In a home for 2 years and you sell it, you're not taxed on the gains, right? But if you live in it for less than 2 years, then it's not technically a live-in flip. It's just a flip, and you're going to pay tax on the profit that you make from selling that house, right?
Yes-ish. If you own the home for less than a year, even if you're living in it, I believe it's taxed as regular income. If you sell it after living there for 1 year but not living there for 2 years, I think it's taxed as long-term capital gains, which I believe is 15%.
Yep.
But if this affects you, please talk to your CPA.
Okay. All right. That's good stuff.
Always great advice. Well, I want to know more about, like, what was the hardest part of living in the home while you're actually working on it, right? Because obviously you weren't in it while that second story was being put on, right?
Oh, yes, I was.
Are you serious? Okay. Well, first of all, I want to know about that. But I mean, the reason I asked this is because we added on to our home, my wife and I and our kids. We lived through a home renovation. And man, it was one of the hardest things we've ever done.
So we've always lived in our flips because we're cheap and we're not going to pay rent at one place or, you know, pay a mortgage one place and pay a mortgage at another place. We could just live there. We chose to live in flip in Colorado in the wintertime because that's when the construction workers were available. So that was freezing cold. It's not for everybody. I can sit here and make it sound really, really awesome because when I cash a check for $100,000, that makes me happy. Not every flip is going to give you $100,000 in profit, but once you sell it, it's really easy to be like, oh, that wasn't so bad. It's like childbirth. You have a baby and you're like, oh my goodness, it hurts so much to have a baby. And then once the baby comes out, you're like, oh, I love this baby. I could totally do it again. So you just forget about the pain, but it is a mess. Like, it is, oh, plan to be out of the house during drywall day and hire somebody to come and clean it for you when you're done, because that's the messiest part. But, you know, when you pull the drywall down to, you know, do whatever you're doing behind the walls, you still have outer walls, so it's not like the whole house is ripped apart. And there's varying levels of live-in flipping. You can do just a cosmetic flip. Right now, the house that we're in, oh my goodness, we got such a smoking hot deal on it. But it's basically cosmetic. I have an ugly kitchen, but I can use it. Like the cabinets still hold stuff and all the appliances are new, but the cabinets are really ugly. The countertop is this white tile countertop. And I've been living in my house, my other house, for about 5 years now with a solid surface countertop. So having a tile countertop, I'm like, wow, why did they ever do these? Like all the grout gets all dirty and gross. Of course it's white.
It's full of crumbs.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Yes.
Well, Mindy, I mean, that's something that we haven't really talked about on the show much is live-in flips, but I love it because I think there are a lot of people that after hearing, you know, how you do it and the money that can be made from it, man, live-in flips are just an awesome way to go for a lot of people, especially if you're okay dealing with the mess while you're doing it. So yeah, I love hearing that part of your story, but we really, really want to get into selling a home and helping people figure out how to do that, especially considering this is airing in February. A lot of people are thinking about selling their home. So we're going to get into that right after the break. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch, they make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/howtomoney for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial. All right, we're back from the break, and we're talking with Mitty Jensen about selling your house for top dollar. And Joel, like you mentioned, I think a lot of folks are considering selling their house. It's kind of at the beginning of the year. They're ramping up. It's about to be spring. So, Mindy, that's our question for you next is, when is the best time to sell a house? You know, we've seen the stories about how the spring season, it seems to be the hottest time to sell a house. Is that
and
actually true?
And it's starting earlier, Mindy. I don't know. I've seen stories about spring housing season starting in January this year because there's so much pent-up demand.
Yeah.
So, okay, maybe you remember back in 2008, there was this housing crash. Because people were losing their jobs, they weren't buying and selling houses. When you're not buying and selling existing houses, you're not building new houses. So there is this huge glut of people who want to move but can't because there's nothing on the market, or they want to move but they can't because they don't have a job. And now they finally have a job and all these people want to move. I've seen the last 2020? So probably the last 4 years, every spring, and I live in Colorado where spring selling season starts in February, every spring, there is just this mad rush of people to put their house on the market so that they can go find another house. So the best time of the year to sell is during the spring selling season, because that's when the most people are looking. So, you know, economic basic law of supply and demand, the most people are looking, the more demand there will be for your property. I just helped somebody buy a house. We closed on December 30th. There were no other offers on this property because nobody's looking between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like, that's the worst time to try and sell a house. But now is the best time to try and sell a house. So if you have a house to sell, you need to get it on the market as soon as you can, and you need to have it looking as good as possible. Now, if it needs a brand new kitchen and a brand new bathroom and all the things that it needs, it can still be clean. Obviously, the nicest house is going to sell for the top dollar, but the cleanest house is going to sell before the dirty house, and it's going to sell for more money than the dirty house will. So the best time to sell is in the spring. You want to know what it is you're selling for. If you've got a job transfer, you kind of don't have a lot of leverage selling your property. If you have a new baby on the way and you're living in a one-bedroom condo, you kind of don't have a lot of leverage. But if you just want to sell because you're sick of living here, or, you know, oh, maybe we want a bigger house, you have a lot more leverage and you can be more choosy with what offer you accept.
Yeah. So you say leverage. What do you mean by that? Is it just kind of, like you said, is it being picky about the offers and just waiting longer, or what do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, so let's use the one where you have a baby on the way. You have a one bedroom condo. You feel like it's not big enough for you. You need to buy a new house. Moving with a 3 week old baby is a terrible idea. Ask me. I've done that twice. Stupid. So you want to move before the baby comes. So you feel more pressure to accept whatever offers out there. So that's really what I mean by leverage. Whereas if you decide, you know, oh, I'm going to sell my house, I'm sick of it. When somebody comes in with a really crappy offer, you can be like, no, I'm not going to accept that. And you can either pull it off the market or figure it out. Wait for a better offer.
Well, in your opinion, Mindy, what are the biggest differences between selling an owner-occupied property, like it's my personal home, I live in it, versus an investment property that someone's selling?
Oh, so, well, an owner-occupied property, you have more control over what the property looks like. Obviously, if you're trying to get top dollar for it, you're going to make it look as nice as possible. You're not going to leave dirty dishes in the sink and crumbs on the floor. Whereas if you're selling...
Joel might surprise you.
I'm a filthy animal.
Okay, everybody else listening would not do that. Don't be like Joel. So if you're trying to sell an investment property that has tenants in it, it's not going to show as nice because your tenants are probably not going to care about the appearance as much as you are. So, you know, it's kind of a... What should you do? Should you wait until the tenants are out and then try to sell it? But then you're not getting rental income from that during the time that there's no tenants in there. Or do you try and sell it with tenants in there and just say, hey, there's tenants. Sorry. You know, that's a bit of a gamble there. when you're selling a house that you flipped, especially if you haven't lived there, you want to stage the house. You want to have really nice furniture in there and make it look as nice as possible because you are trying to get the highest dollar for that.
Gotcha. Well, so Mindy, so let's say someone has decided that they want to go ahead and sell their home. Like you mentioned, to have it clean, right? Step one.
You laugh. But that, become a real estate agent and you will walk into these homes.
Oh my
gosh,
did they not know I was coming today? But on that note, right, what are some of the other things that need to be done to the physical house, to the property, in order to get it ready for the listing?
Okay, so if you are listening to this show, something's wrong with your house. The doorknob doesn't open right, or you have to like lift up the sliding glass door to get it to close, or like whatever. Fix that. That's going to show up in the home inspection. The buyer's going to discover it at some point. Fix those weird little things that you know you should be doing. You know how you have that window that like doesn't close quite all the way and you have to hit it from the outside? Like fix all those things because that's just going to cost you money later. When you're listing your house, there's this thing called a material defect. Material defect can also be pronounced very expensive to fix. You need to disclose those if you know or if you should have known. Like the roof is leaking. There's black mold in the roof, in the attic. You should have known that there's black mold because you should get up there and look at it. You should fix that or disclose that that's an issue. If you don't and the buyer can prove that you knew about it and didn't disclose, they can sue you and they'll probably win, which is kind of a scary thing. I probably kind of derailed the show there, but you know, fix the little things, the broken tile in the kitchen, replace the tile, put linoleum in, fix that one tile, you know, make the house look as nice as possible because you're going to get lowballed on the offer price if you don't.
Well, I think you're completely right on that. And I think one of the things that we have a problem with as humans, it's like we look at our house and it's harder to see the faults. And so we almost maybe even need a friend to come in and pick our house apart to a certain extent so that we know what to fix, right? Can't that be helpful?
Yes, an honest friend.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want some yes man friend, but you want somebody to come in and be like, hey, it smells like you have a petting zoo in your house. I'm sorry, if you have a cat, 99% of the time, it smells like you have a cat in your house.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to buy your house if you have a cat.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
If you have, you know, your buyer might have allergies. If you have a dog, oh my goodness, please don't leave your dog at your house during a showing. Have a neighbor come over and walk the dog or take them to their house or even board the dog, especially if you're first listing the house. I went into a house, you knock on the door and you hear these dogs barking. You're like, what is going on here? You open the door, five of the biggest dogs I have ever seen, like it, behind a baby gate in the master bedroom. Wow. And all I can think of is they're going to knock down that gate and come attack me. We didn't even go in. Like, don't have animals in your house when you're trying to sell the house. And if you do, clean the litter box every day, like wipe up after the dog, you know, pick everything up. Just the cleanest house is going to sell. The nicest smelling house is going to sell. And you can tell when there is like those little Glade plugins, you can tell when that's covering up the smell of a dog.
So when we're talking about getting these repairs done, right, you have your picky friend come in and be like, yo, your house is not up to snuff. It needs some work. Do you have any suggestions, any guidelines on how people should go about thinking about doing repairs themselves or hiring someone to do them? Should they be kind of trying to tackle the little stuff on their own and saving that money for the bigger things that might be wrong with their house? Or what do you think? How should we handle that?
Well, let's look at what's really wrong with your house. If your paint needs touched up, anybody can paint. You can get a paintbrush and a can of paint and, you know, touch up the little spots that your kids knocked into. Anybody can clean. Anybody can vacuum. There's things that you should do yourself. If you have a leaky faucet, you should call a plumber. If you have, you know, you want to change out all the electrical fixtures, like all the light fixtures, because they're old and brass and kind of outdated, have those ready, but call a professional and, you know, spend the money on that. Now, I am a big DIY person, and I would say that electricity isn't that hard, but the time to learn how to wire a house is not when you're going to sell it.
Yeah, maybe on your own dime in your own property.
Yeah,
I'm watching those YouTube videos trying to become an amateur electrician.
It's like, I think I got this.
That's probably not going to work out.
I'm recording this in my office where I just installed 6 can lights all by my big girl self.
Wow. That's totally impressive. I've never installed electrical for me. It just totally scares me. Yeah. Like, we've talked about this before on the show because I have not sat down and actually learned it. But I think once you know it and you can feel confident. But I lack that confidence right now.
Well, I will invite you over because I have a lot of electricity work to do in my house. So come over anytime and I will rearrange my rehab schedule to do lights.
Let's do it. I love that.
Outlets or whatever. But I will say I should caveat this with my father-in-law is an electrician. So he has shown me how to do things. He showed Carl how to do things. And then Carl showed me how to do things. Step number one, turn off the electricity at the breaker.
Well, the real question is how come you are the one doing all the electrical work and it's not Carl? He's the one that's got the electrician heritage. So,
well, because I was making a YouTube video for Bigger Pockets.
You're doing it for work. Well, so I have a related question though, Mindy, real quick. So we're talking about repairs, right? Like the things that you need to get your house basically up to par. When does it make sense, or does it ever make sense, to make improvements on the property just for resale? Like, you know, you hear people doing that where they've had the worst countertops for the 20 years that they lived there, or even just a few years, but then right before they sell it, you know, they go through all these small renovations to get it ready for the listing. Does that ever make sense to go ahead and do those things?
Yes. Would you like me to elaborate?
Of course. Yeah. Please. Please.
So you walk into a house and it's got a decent layout. You like the kitchen, you like the bathrooms, but you cannot get over the fact that every single wall is painted fluorescent orange. If you're selling this property, your agent should come in and tell you, you have to repaint all of this. Nobody's going to buy this house in this fluorescent orange. You can actually get a really big discount on a property just because they didn't paint.
What about those bigger improvements, like potentially remodeling a bathroom or completely redoing a kitchen? Oftentimes, you know, what you read is your return dollar for dollar. It's not going to make enough of a difference, right? Like you're making 60 cents on the dollar when you renovate a kitchen or 70 cents on the dollar when you renovate a bathroom. So does it ever make sense to do a bigger remodel like that before you sell the house?
I think it makes sense if you are doing the work yourself. So we just did a bathroom here in the house. It cost us $1,000. We pulled out, I don't know why they do this, but in Colorado, they carpet the bathrooms.
Weird.
It's disgusting.
That's awful.
So we pulled out the carpet. We pulled off the wallpaper. We put a new vanity, a new toilet, tiled the floors, painted the walls. And then behind the toilet and vanity, we put this kind of like shiplap board up. All of the materials were $1,000 plus, you know, time. I don't think about the time. I know a lot of people are like, oh, you need to pay yourself. Well, I just remodeled the bathroom for $1,000. I don't want to put, like, my time into it is different. If you are getting ready to sell your house, a carpeted bathroom versus a tile bathroom, the tile bathroom is going to make the house sell faster. I'm going to look at that carpet and think, that's disgusting. It's got mold. It's got urine stains. Like, there's a lot of disgustingness in a bathroom. I want it to be crisp and clean, and that's what the new one looks like. So if you're doing the work yourself, you should absolutely consider doing that before you put the house on the market. But again, going back to your why, are you selling it because you've got a baby coming? You really don't have time to put that work into it. It took us a whole week, but Carl doesn't have a job. So, and I say that lovingly, he is retired, yes. But I sometimes call him unemployed.
I'm sure he loves that too, right?
He's like, I'm like, does that make you feel bad? He's like, no, I don't care.
Well, Mindy, we're talking about, you know, being able to get a lot of money from selling your home. And so one of the ways that you might be able to save money when it comes to selling your house is to do a for sale by owner. And so we're going to get to that and a few other things right after the break.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast, and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, we're back from the break. We're talking with our good friend Mindy Jensen about how to sell a home and get top dollar for that home. And Mindy, we just talked about how somebody's house, their property, it's all set up and ready to go, hopefully, now. They've made the repairs, they've decluttered, they've cleaned it. So let's get into who is going to sell the house. So what's your take? How do you feel about selling a home by owner? Should FSBO be a legit consideration, or is that just like a stupid move for people?
Yes. To both of that.
Yes. Oh, good.
All of the above. Joel's favorite answer.
So I am a licensed real estate agent in the state of Colorado. And if you'd like to buy a home, give me a call. But I also wasn't a licensed real estate agent in any state. And I did sell my house for sale by owner. And a lot of people want to put the time in to sell their house by themselves. They want to save the commission. It is a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act to say that the going rate is whatever. But typically, a real estate commission goes for between 2.5% and 3% per side. So there's the selling agent and the buying agent. So around 5.5% or 5% to 6% of the sales price goes to the real estate agents. So some people look at that and they think, oh my goodness, I'm going to sell my house for $400,000. I have to give somebody $20,000 to $24,000 to do this. I'll just do it myself. I understand that. I was in that same boat. And if you're willing to put in the work, you're willing to do the showings, you're willing to do the advertising, you're willing to, you know, accept the contract and read through all the stipulations and all of that, then FSBO is a really valid way to sell your house. If you're not willing to do that, if you don't have the time to do that, you're too busy, you don't feel comfortable doing that, you should use a real estate agent. The iBuying is not something that I really have a lot of experience with. This is your like your Zillows and your Open Doors and that kind of thing where somebody will, you list, you say, I want to sell my house. They say, hey, we'll buy your house. Here's the price we'll give you. And they say, you know, we'll give you $400,000 for your house minus a 10% commission minus these repairs are going to cost $25,000. So minus that, minus this, minus this, minus this. And in the end, you typically end up with less money in your pocket than if you went with a traditional agent or you sold it for sale by owner. It all goes back to your why. Why are you selling the house? Are you selling it because you need to get out of it right away? Or are you selling it because you're sick of it? When you list with a traditional real estate agent, they put it on the MLS or the multiple listing service. It makes it available in a database to every real estate agent. So if you're looking to get the most eyeballs on your property, that's the way to go. But when you do that, you're giving up 5% to 6% of the sales price. If you want to go for sale by owner, you can list the property, you plant a sign in your front yard, you have an open house yourself, you can start marketing the property and it doesn't start counting days on market, which is an indicator of how long the house has been for sale. When it's on the MLS, as soon as you put it on the market, that's one day on market.
Well, and the MLS seems to be one of the most important things when you're listing a home, right? That's where all the agents go in order to know how which homes to show to their clients. So how important is it to be on the MLS? And if you are attempting to do for sale by owner, is there a way that those people can get their home on the MLS?
Yes, there is, Joel. Yeah, being on the MLS is where all the agents go. That's where I go when somebody calls me up and says, hey, I want to look for a property. Let me go to the MLS. Let me show you all the properties that are listed right now. And I get them a list based on their sales price or how many bedrooms they want or whatever. I send them a list and they go through it and they're like, oh, I want to see these three houses. I don't have the time to knock on everybody's door in the city that we're looking at to see if they're interested in selling their house. I don't have time to drive around and look for for sale by owner signs. And I don't go on Craigslist and all those other ways to find for sale by owner properties. I go to the MLS because that's where the majority of the properties are. I want to say 90%, but it kind of sounds like I'm just making that up. So I'll just say 90% of homes are on the MLS. If you want the most eyeballs on your property, you want to be on the MLS. There is a way to have your cake and eat it too. You can be for sale by owner with a flat fee MLS listing service. So you pay a real estate agent a flat fee, $500, $1,000 to put your property on the MLS. They don't take care of showings. They don't take care of negotiations. They don't take care of anything. All they do is list it on the MLS for you. So you get all the eyeballs, but you're still just doing all the showings yourself. Remember I said that it's 2.5% to 3% per side, approximately. So if you're not offering the buyer's agent some sort of incentive to sell your house, they may not show it. I think this is kind of a jerky move. You should show the house that your clients want to see. And legally, you're supposed to show the house that your clients want to see, regardless of the remuneration to yourself. But there's no law that says what order you have to show houses in. So the house that offers, you know, 1% selling commission is probably going to get shown last, if at all.
If you know, though, that like the FSBO route, right? For sale by owner. If you know that that's not going to work out for you, you've got a full-time job, you don't have a lot of time to devote to the move. It sounds like maybe going with a real estate agent that might make the most sense. But how do you go about finding the right one? Like, what questions should you be asking specific agents when you're interviewing them, essentially?
You should interview your agent, and you should interview a lot of agents. You shouldn't just like drive past somebody's sign and be like, oh, I've seen that before, I'll call that person. You should absolutely question your agents. What would you list my property at? If they answer that over the phone, I'd be really leery. You need to come and see my house. You need to see all of these amazing improvements that I've done. You need to see the house itself, walk the house, you know, smell the house, listen to the house, and be in the house in order to give me a price. How did you come up with that price? Oh, I really think that this price will work. A property doesn't sell for what you think it's worth. A property sells based on comps. And a comp is a comparable property located near the property that you're trying to sell. Similar in bedrooms and bathrooms and, you know, so similar in layout, similar in condition. That's a comparable that has sold recently. So if your agent, your potential agent says, oh, I can get you $400,000 because I just know that the market's going up. So I know we can get this. Well, why do you know that? Show me proof that that's what can happen, because that's what the appraisers are going by. When you get a loan from a bank, they don't just give you a giant pile of cash. They make sure that the property that you're buying is worth that much money. So they're going to send an appraiser out. If the appraisal comes back low, they're not going to give you a loan. Let's say you have the property under contract for $400,000 and the appraisal comes back at $375,000. The bank is not going to give you a loan for $400,000. They're going to give you a loan for $375,000. And you have to come up with the difference. You have to ask the seller to drop the price, or you have to walk away. So I think asking the agent how they came to the price that they came with is a good first step. When, you know, if everybody's saying, oh, I'll list it for $375,000, and this agent says, I'll list it for $400,000, a lot of times agents will say that to get the listing. And then when it doesn't sell, they're like, oh, you should drop the price to $375,000. Well, by that time, you've already got the days on market. Your listing is considered stale. You've dropped the price. So you start to look a little desperate. So you definitely want to know how they came about that price before you sign a paper with them. You want to know how they communicate. You want somebody who communicates the way that you communicate. Hmm. And if all you want to do is have phone calls, you don't want an agent who texts you and emails you. And that's, you know, that's valid. However you want to communicate is valid, but you need to find somebody who communicates the way that you can communicate. How long have you been an agent? You could be very experienced, be part of a team, and then you're never going to actually work with Mindy Jensen, the agent. You're going to work with one of her underlings because Mindy is so busy, she can't work with you. If you want to work with Mindy, you want to make sure that you want to work with Mindy. If you don't care, if you just want her name on your sign, you know, and that's fine too. If you just got your license, that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't know anything. I've been buying and selling real estate personally for 22 years. But I have been a licensed agent for 6 years. So when I first got my license, I still knew a lot more than a lot of agents who had been doing it for a while, just because I had the personal experience. So having a newbie agent isn't necessarily a bad thing. You just need to know that that's what you're getting into.
That's great advice for picking the right agent, Mindy. That's a lot of stuff a lot of check marks I think people can then look to hit in order to make sure that the person they're hiring to do this really, really important job that could potentially save or cost them in the tens of thousands of dollar range, to make sure they're getting the right person on their side. So I think that's some great stuff. I want to talk about like market conditions for a second too. Me personally, I'm not currently planning on selling any of the homes that my primary or any of my rental properties anytime soon. But I guess I have this question for you. Like, should I be considering selling something? Because when the market conditions are ripe for a seller, should somebody that hasn't thought about selling a home maybe start to consider selling based on market conditions alone? Like, what do you think about that?
Wow. That's a really interesting conundrum, because I do believe that not getting too political, we have an unstable political climate in Washington, and that can affect the housing market, that can affect the general economy of the United States. At this time that we're recording, we have some issues with Iran right now, and that could affect, you know, the economy and the general market, the world market. If you want to sell, maybe now's a great time to sell. But why do you want to sell? You just said you're not interested in selling. Why would you sell? Why would you move to a new market? I personally have moved. This is my 28th home. So to me, it's not a big deal to move.
Wow.
But I'm also not.
Oh my gosh. That's so like, many homes.
Well, when you flip them every 2 years, you can rack a lot of them up. But like, I wouldn't necessarily just say move for the sake of moving. If you want to move to a new school district, if you want to move to a bigger home or a smaller home, now's certainly a good time to start thinking about selling. But, you know, if you're not thinking about selling, if it's not in your plans, then you don't have to, you know, accept the first offer that comes your way. You don't have to accept an offer that you don't like. I don't know. You could always put your house on Zillow, make me move.
Yeah.
Carl put our house on Zillow, make me move at $600,000. And somebody reached out to him. I'm moving to Longmont and I need a house. Can I buy yours? I'm like, no, we don't have any place to move to.
I think that's a great way to think about it. Like if you put it this just astronomical price on something like Zillow, make me move, and someone is willing to pay that price, something that's, you know, above normal market conditions, and you're like, I'd be happy to sell it if I was able to get, well, that much, but that's just not likely, then I think that's a reason to sell potentially. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's interesting that with these conditions where there is just this incredibly low supply, rates are so low, especially when we're talking about the cheaper homes, the starter homes, there's just not enough of them out there for buyers. And so the prices have just gotten jacked up in a big way. And it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few years, because I have a feeling that's not sustainable.
I completely agree. And it goes back to 2008 and 2009 and 2010. Builders stopped building houses. They went out of business and they didn't come back when the market changed. And now there's a favorable housing market. The builders have found new jobs and they didn't come back. There's a builder, a couple of builders in my area that will give you a job, train you, pay you while you're being trained. And then you have to sign like a 1 or 2 year contract with them to work for them building houses. But they'll teach you framing and electric and plumbing and roofing and like all the things that go into being a home builder, because they can't find anybody to hire. So it's not sustainable to have these starter homes going up so crazy, but there were so many homes that weren't being built. Now that everybody has jobs again and the economy is humming along, there's no place to buy. So you pay more because that's the only house that's there. And you pay more in order to get the house.
Yeah. And all the homes that are currently being built seem to be in the higher end. All the apartments, and I want to say all, but most of the homes and apartments that are currently being built are on the more expensive side. And that's just because there's more incentive right now, especially in this economy, to provide those types of housing. And so there's just not much in the low end. And because of that, it's really jacked those prices up a great deal.
Right. And I mean, how much does it cost to frame a wall? You can buy, like, you order the framed wall from the wall framing company or whatever. It comes to you. It's a 20 by 14 wall already framed out. You just slap it together. It's pennies more. It's like printing a t-shirt. It costs $20 to print one t-shirt, but to print 20 t-shirts, it's like $24. Yeah. To print 50 t-shirts, it's like $28. It's the all the setup and all the, you know, all of that. So once you get people to crank out a house, I will pay more for a 5-bedroom house than I will a 2-bedroom house. But the builder doesn't cost that much more to build a 5-bedroom house versus a 2-bedroom house. So why would I build these little houses that I'm not making much money on when I could build these big houses that I make a ton of money on?
Yeah, so true, Mindy. Hey, this has been a fantastic conversation. I think our listeners are going to get a lot out of this, especially the ones who are actually considering selling their home. And again, we're going to give away a bunch of copies of your book, How to Sell Your Home, which is essentially, I mean, it's a guide, and it'll take our listeners step by step through the entire process of, you know, thinking through why it is that you're selling, you know, through the entire process. We touched on a lot of those topics, but there is way more to it than what we just discussed. And Mindy, you know, we mentioned the podcast that you host. Where specifically can folks find you online?
I am all over biggerpockets.com. I'm the community manager there. So I am all over the forums. You can, if you are not a member of Bigger Pockets and want to join, I will be your first colleague. I am also on every social media platform except for TikTok, because I don't understand that one yet. And I am at...
Your daughters can teach you that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I am at Mindy at BP, MindyAtBP.
Awesome. Well, yeah, people can find you there. And Mindy, seriously, awesome hanging out with you. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, I'm so excited to be on How to Money. This is like bucket
list. This is a bucket checklist item, right?
It is. It is a bucket list checklist item.
Yeah,
so.
There you go.
And I love talking about real estate. So if somebody has a question about real estate, please email me, Mindy@biggerpockets.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, Mindy.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, Joel, man, what a fantastic conversation we had with Mindy. She had a lot of great advice on just some of the practical steps that we need to take before we sell our home. So on that note, or maybe not on that note, I don't know what you're going to say, but what is your big takeaway from our conversation with Mindy?
Man, I think the thing that struck me the most was when she said, something is wrong with your house. And I think there are so many of us truly who have this kind of Pollyanna-ish view towards our home. In our eyes, someone would walk in and point a couple things out, and we might get frustrated or annoyed that someone would think that those things are wrong with our home. What are you talking about? My home's great. And maybe some of us don't have that view. Maybe we can see all the flaws in our home very clearly. But I think you need to look at your home with a very critical eye before you do sell it. So yeah, anything that you can do with obviously just the easy things, painting and cleaning. But then on top of that, all those little things that might seem insignificant that you can fix, that you can take care of on the front end before people come to take a look at your home while they're considering the price that they're going to offer. Even just a doorknob fix or making sure that window closes properly, right? Those are kind of the little things that can make a big impact and they can stick in a buyer's mind. So yeah, something is wrong with your house. Find out what it is and get it fixed so that you can make top dollar for your house. That's what stuck out to me and what Mindy said.
Nice, man. Well, okay, so what I'm going to share is actually really similar to that, but it doesn't have to do with your specific house or, you know, like features of your house, but it has to do with what's in your house, that being your pets. Mindy mentioned just, you know, whether you have a cat or whether you have a dog, you probably don't notice the smell. And I will say from personal experience, for years, having a big old Great Dane, you get used to the smell, but it's not until you don't have a pet that you realize, oh man, it smells really fresh and clean in here. And so, you know, even the smallest animals can have a lingering smell.
Yeah, get those goldfish and hamsters out too.
Dude, seriously, hamsters and gerbils and rabbits.
But goldfish, they don't really smell, right?
I don't know. Doesn't it kind of like smell like seaweed? Like,
oh, yeah, probably.
Like
I guess.
Wetness and
get Nemo out of there too.
But either way, I think just kind of keeping your pets in mind, you know, she mentioned definitely not having them there, like have a friend walk them. I think even maybe a step beyond that, if you know you're going to have a string or a series of showings, maybe for 1 week where you're going to hit it real hard, see if a friend can hang on to your dog for that week. Maybe your parents, maybe your in-laws, maybe they can watch the dog. Maybe they can take the cats to where you can almost get a fresh restart on your home. I was really thinking about that when she was kind of talking through that. And I know I'm much more sensitive to the smell of animals now that I don't personally have a pet.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of folks out there, obviously, who do have pets, but there are a lot of folks who don't have pets and who don't want pets and who do not like the way that they smell.
Yeah, and that could really be make or break. I mean, some buyers might say, this smells like an animal and I don't want it. And even if, you know, you're completely used to it, there are a lot of people that aren't. And so, yeah,
definitely.
That is definitely something to be aware of. Good point. All right, Matt, what were your thoughts on the beer that we had on the show today? We had a beer that our friend Josh gave us from Casa Agria out in California. This one was called Slammin' at the Club, and it was a clean-cut American lager is what it said. And it's got this like sweet punk rock can design.
Yeah, so the reason it's called Slammin' at the Club, this is like I was reading the label. It's kind of an homage, tribute to Nardcore punk rock, which is a specific type of punk rock that originated in Southern California.
I got to be honest. I'm reading some of the bands that they have listed on here.
Some of them. They're so good.
I don't know any of them. But
well, it's before our time as well. So.
Okay. All right. Then I feel better.
Yeah.
There's one called, oh gosh, I can't even read
some of these. You can't read. Yeah.
I can't read some of them. Fist Fight on Ecstasy is one of them, which is...
That's one of the more tame ones.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'll name that one.
But yeah, this one is called Slamming at the Club. It was a lager. And you know what? That's not a style that we have often. But like I've mentioned before, the more often that I drink some of these just well-crafted lagers, the more I appreciate them because I see what lagers are actually supposed to taste like. They're not flavorless and they're not totally skunky. It's this nice blend of a clean drinking crisp beer that has all that nice beer flavor, but without that cruddy aftertaste that you can kind of come to expect from some of the mass-produced lagers out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think clean and crisp are the two words that describe this and that describe any really well-made lager, but the folks at Casa Agria, they really know what they're doing. I feel like we've had a bunch of different beer styles by that brewery at this point, and every one that they've made just is on point. The flavors are beautiful, and this was no exception. This was a great lager from them. I really enjoyed it, and so yeah, big thanks to our buddy Josh for sending this one our way. Thanks, Josh. All right, Matt, and let's get around to that giveaway. Mindy is generously giving away 10 copies of her book, How to Sell Your Home. And if you want to be entered into this giveaway, all you have to do is review our show. So if you haven't left a review for us, we'd really appreciate it. All you got to do is go to Apple Podcasts, click 5 stars, preferably, and say something nice about the show and what you've learned. Or you can also, if you're not an Apple person like me, go to Stitcher.com. You can leave a review there. And then shoot us an email at howtomoneypod@gmail.com. Let us know the screen name that you've left the review under. And if you've already left a review in the past, just send us an email. Let us know that you want to be entered into this giveaway, and you can be entered into.
Yeah, man, that's right. And so folks listening, if you want to be entered in, you have until Friday at noon. Make sure you get that email into us by Friday at noon. That'll be when we close that giveaway and choose the names. And we'll have our show notes up on our site like we normally do at howtomoney.com. And I think that's going to be it, man. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.